This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Junks are brought to you by Crop Metcalf, the official heating and cooling company of the Junkies. If you're looking to be the next five-star HVAC technician or plumber, just go to cropmetcalf.com. Join their team today. Taking your calls right now at 800-636-1067 as we're just about 12 hours from puck drop of Caps Canes Game 2 from Capital One Arena. All of our Caps talk is brought to you by Ace Computers. Ace Computers proudly recommends Windows 11 Pro for the U.S. military, made in America. Check out acecomputers.com now.
Updated numbers.
Okay, let me
hear
them.
On FanDuel. Carolina is minus 137 to win. Washington coming back plus 114. So Carolina a little bit more of a favorite to win game two than they were game one. I think they were minus 125 to win game one.
I had to leave early yesterday. I did hear your interview with Joe B. That's when I got in the car. I didn't hear the interview with Brent Johnson. Do you feel a little bit better?
Nobody heard that.
Nobody did.
Oh, okay. God, I didn't even hear that.
So that's your update.
I was at a church listening to the rosary a million times.
Yeah, Brent Johnson decided not to appear. Joe, and we don't know why.
I was funny. I was talking
Joe
to somebody.
Joe was measured.
He was measured. Yeah. Joe can't go and say, yeah, we're going to get smoked.
Yeah.
He was like, I really, and he might be right. I really think we're going to split here, and then we're going to go there and split, and it's going to be down to the final three.
I heard him say out Carolina, and to move the goalie side to side.
Well, that's basic.
He's a big guy.
That's
basic. But that's what he said.
So what I think is interesting, you know, again, as a hockey novice, just somebody that gets excited during the playoffs, the idea that, because it does seem like they're swarming you, right? And that's their whole deal. Like they're pressing you all over the ice. It sounds like it's not that dissimilar when you have the dreaded two goal lead in hockey, right? Mm-hmm. Why is it my interpretation? Why is it the dreaded two goal lead? Well, because they have nothing to lose and they're just pressing, bringing everybody forward, and it gives them more chances. It seems like that's kind of like what Carolina does all the time. So that does make them vulnerable.
Yeah, so Carberry has to find a way to counterpunch that find a way to expose that aggressiveness and use it against them somehow.
I will say one of my Long Island guys who is a diehard hockey guy, and he's like, I don't miss playoff hockey. So he watches it all. He texted me sort of out of the blue yesterday, and he was like, don't worry. In his opinion, now he could have been saying this just to be nice to me, but he said, the Caps are a better team. Carolina just had a better night. Mm. So he's a diehard hockey guy.
I can see that. I can see like Carolina, they were playing like at the peak of their powers and the Caps were a little bit off.
Yeah.
And hopefully that, you know, those roles are flip-flopped tonight. And the
actually,
Caps are the better team.
Actually, you know why he texted me? And I think I disappointed him because I wasn't locked in on it. Because, you know, he thinks I'm a radio guy and I would know all this stuff. You know, he's a Long Island sports guy.
Sure.
And
what was he asking about?
So here's what he said. He says, let's cut the BS. You know, of course, he says Emily Kaplan has to be Gary Bettman's niece. The absolute worst color commentator. He says, I speak better than her. And he's kind of known for having a stutter. They cut to her and I hit the mute button. And I actually said, I don't even know who you're talking about. Was she even covering
she's not a color commentator.
She's just a sideline person?
Yeah, she's a sideline reporter.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he
doesn't know. She interviews the players and coaches.
Okay.
That's what she does.
Yeah.
I didn't realize.
I've never had an issue with her when I've seen her, but I'm going to turn down the national broadcast, and I'm going to listen to John Walton on the Fan tonight. I did it for the first game, and it was so much better. I would recommend anybody listening do the same tonight.
Right.
Sync it up with the TV.
Thank God
and listen
she wasn't
John
the color,
Walton.
Because I was thinking to myself, did I miss a female color commentator during the entire game? That would have been embarrassing.
No. Ray Ferraro's their technically their color commentator.
Right.
But it's a lot different because they have ESPN has Ferraro down ice level.
Right.
And Sean McDonough's just calling the game by himself
kind of
up in the box.
A cool concept. Like he's down like closer to the action.
But there's not a lot of interaction between the two, like they're like Joe B and Locker, because they're sitting next to each other watching the game from the same standpoint.
So, Caps fans, how are you feeling heading into game two, 7 o'clock tonight from Capital One Arena? Was not the Caps' best effort in game one. They were thoroughly dominated throughout the game. Were heftily outshot by the Carolina Hurricanes, out hit by the Hurricanes, which I think is a huge problem that needs to be corrected. And they struggled in the faceoff dot as well. So there was a lot that Coach Carbs had to correct heading into game two that he saw problems with in game one. And we played his entire press conference after game one. He was not happy. Yeah, I mean, we
a lot of short answers.
He was a regular guest on this show. Hopefully you listened to that throughout the season. He was great, but he was not in the mood to sit and
but you know
be
what?
Expansive about that
he's
game.
He still handled himself well, didn't throw a tantrum. Yeah, he was a pro.
He's a pro.
He was a
absolutely.
Pro. Yeah.
But you could tell he was super Rick in that post game. He just wanted to get out of there, had a few like one or two word answers, expanded on a few, but he just wanted to get that behind him and start preparing for
game
two.
I wonder if he went back to his office with his coaching staff to watch the film of the game, or if he just went right home.
Yeah, I don't know.
I
would have gone back to my office. I would have kept the coaches out, and I would have gone to my beer fridge.
Yeah,
and I would have grabbed a beer. I would have decompressed by myself for a little bit and not get too angry about it, and then just try to move on to the next.
No, the coaches I know, they're right into the film immediately.
Yeah.
And taking notes.
I mean, it's probably like
getting pissed off.
Probably like a pro golfer when they feel like they have a bad round, they go right back to the range for half an hour, an hour to try to work out the kinks. Probably similar.
All right, 800-636-1067. How are you feeling? I'll tell you, a lot of people disappointed in me because I don't have much faith, but that's kind of how I am. I don't have a lot of faith, but hopefully I'm wrong.
Hopefully you're proving
correct. I hope that Joe B's right. Because he said he expects him to win tonight and split.
If we got
to
split, we got to fight.
I'll say this: if the Caps lose tonight and they just look outclassed, I will go into a mini depression over the weekend.
Yeah,
I won't be a very happy person.
Because is there part of you like? Because we're free rolling after 2018. We all kind of had like, it doesn't matter. Whatever happens, happens. Now it's kind of the point where they were so good this year that you kind of are having dreams of hoisting the cup again. In the back of your mind,
the goalposts have moved. The expectations are different.
Yeah,
because I mean this team outperformed any expectations preseason, the best team in the East. So you expect them to make some noise in the playoffs.
All right, let's go to Tyler Mechanicsville. Tyler, what's up, man?
Hey, good morning, Jocks. Love the show. Been listening since I was a kid.
Thank you, Tyler. Thanks, how old are you now, Tyler? May we ask?
I'll be 30 next month.
30. And you started listening at what age?
About, I guess, as early as I can remember going to school, early 2000s.
Very nice.
Wow, what on 20 plus years, man.
What
Thank
on earth
you.
Do you do out in Mechanicsville?
I just live there, but work PG.
So. You work in PG County?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought he said PT.
No. You work. What do you do in PG County? I'm just curious. What do you do?
I work in law enforcement.
Law enforcement.
Oh, nice.
Thank you for your service.
Yes, thank
nice.
You.
Nice. All right, what do you got?
So, a lifelong DC sports fan. I mean, I feel what you guys are saying. You know, we hope for the best, expect the worst, typically. But what I do think is Carbear, he's going to get into the boys. And what really needs to happen, I think, for us to win tonight is we need to win that battle on the boards, as you guys were saying.
Right.
Make those crisper passes because we need to throw the bodies around, make more hits, be more aggressive. I think the crowd will be louder tonight, you know, Thursday night. Hopefully people can get off work tomorrow, get loud. So I think we can come at them tonight. I mean, we know it's a 7-game series. I don't think this game or this series is getting won, you know, in any less than 6 or 7 games. So.
Well, that's optimistic.
Yeah.
I'll take that. I'd actually take a 6-game loss, 6th or 7th game, 7-game loss. At this point, over getting swept.
I don't want to just acquiesce to a 7th game loss at this point.
That would be
brutal.
I'm
not signing up for that program.
Hey, Tyler, thank you, buddy. Be safe out there, pal.
Yeah, be safe, buddy.
All right, buddy.
So, Kicks, would you rather them get swept?
I was about to pose this. Yeah,
lose an overtime game 7 here.
I,
That would be here.
I think this is easy.
So I know what you're going to say.
You're going to say
I'd rather the Caps got swept.
Yes. Yeah,
because it's too painful.
It's too painful to get to game seven and then overtime. Just I would have borderline heart failure. Yeah. Like it's so tense. Like playoff hockey's intense enough already.
Mm-hmm.
But when you go to overtime, it just gets ratcheted up. I'd rather be swept. All right, that doesn't feel good to be swept because they got swept by the Rangers last year. But again,
but you didn't expect
the expectations
anything.
Were right. way different.
Correct. Yeah.
They had to battle and fight and claw their way into the playoffs.
No
last
one expected
year just
them
to qualify.
This I mean, I didn't expect different. Them to get swept, but no one expected them to beat the Rangers last year.
No.
You know, I've just sort of stumbled onto a playoff beard.
Yeah.
I haven't been really shaving, but I've been trimming.
Yeah, me too.
And then lately, I haven't even been trimming.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I'm just going to go with the playoff beard bit.
I like it.
I kind of stumbled into it, but
good.
I've never seen you go, though, over a month. So let's win this series and see what happens.
Well, that doesn't mean that I can't trim, right?
I don't think you're supposed to touch it.
I mean, I don't want to have like a Jason Worth thing.
Yeah, you're supposed to let it get gnarly.
I think that's the spirit of it.
Huh?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I mean, of course, I can back out of anything.
Yeah, of course.
But okay, I'll commit to that, sure. Let's go to Josh in Springfield. Josh, what's up? You're on with the Junks.
Hey guys, love the show. First time, long time. EB, yes, definitely go for it. Just keep it going until the Caps are out of the playoffs, the beard.
All right.
Anyway, just want to say for tonight, I feel good. I think Caps going to make some adjustments. I think they win. I think they get back on track. But I need EB to get back on this game. A couple days ago, you were talking about, you know, Caps are, why are they underdogs? And we're playing great.
I didn't understand. I didn't understand. Then I watched them. Now I understand.
Right. Well, I'm just saying the Caps that we saw Tuesday night, that's not the Caps team that, you know, got us into this position. So
why do you think that is?
Whatever.
Why do you think that is? Why did they not come out there and just start smashing dudes? Those guys are vets. This is a pretty veteran team.
Sometimes, like, those 5 or 6 days off can affect the team differently. Like, you know, some teams just like to keep it going. Like, they only need like 1 or 2 days off and they just get right back into it. I don't know. Maybe the time off just didn't help them very much. Maybe they're slow, sluggish, rusty, whatever it was.
But right.
I think they got kind of a wake up call on Tuesday, and I think they'll get back into it on Thursday, today, tonight.
All right. Hope you're right.
I'm glad you're confident, Josh.
But I wonder if any of it also is just maybe just a little overconfidence the way they did in round one. Just like a subconscious, not a conscious thing where we think we're great.
Yeah.
But. You know, round one was relatively easy.
I don't know. I mean,
you start feeling yourself a little bit.
I heard Lars Eller get interviewed, and he basically spoke to the fact that he knew that the Canes would be a bigger challenge than Montreal.
Yeah.
Like, he wasn't trying
Those
to disrespect.
Guys aren't dumb.
He wasn't trying to disrespect the Canadiens, but he knew that you're taking a step up in level of competition. So I don't think that there was any sort of, oh, we're just going to breeze through this series.
Well, you don't think it consciously, but sometimes subconsciously you can feel yourself.
Yeah, maybe.
You know what I mean?
Maybe that's part of it.
It's a subconscious thing.
I just think they came out and they just got outclassed over 60 minutes.
They got punched in the mouth in game one. And how do you respond in game two? So hopefully it's a strong response when they take the ice tonight. Yeah. Coming up in about half an hour, we'll talk to Tim Donnelly. He's the host of The Drive with Tim Donnelly daily, 3 to 6 on The Fan in Raleigh. So we'll get the Carolina Hurricanes perspective of this matchup coming up at 7:45. Tim Donnelly will join us at 7:45. He does afternoons on The Fan in Raleigh. So we'll talk Caps, Canes from a little bit different perspective at 7:45. And Warren Sharp will join us later in the show. We'll talk NFL with him.
Tim Donnelly's a good dude. Played quarterback at University of Delaware. He's the cousin of Sean Glennon, of course. Friends of ours and who played at Virginia Tech, but he's been bouncing around doing radio down in the Virginia Beach area. Now he's down in Raleigh, so he'll be very cool. Give a good perspective.
All right, so we wanted to talk some Commanders here. We have some audio of Todd McShay. He joined Craig Hoffman on the Team 980 yesterday. There's a little bit of a longer clip, but this is Todd McShay talking about the Commanders draft and what he liked about it.
For people that may not know, I mean, Todd McShay used to be with ESPN for a long, long time, right? Who's he with now? Is he just doing his own thing?
I'm not sure.
I believe so.
He's doing his own thing?
I think he does stuff with The Ringer.
do.
Oh, in the ringer? Maybe, okay. Mostly a lot of his
own stuff. But a very well-known, like, draft Nick kind of guy.
All right, so here's Todd McShay from the Craig Hoffman Show yesterday.
I just thought, I mean, the first, what, four picks, I guess it was, in my opinion, they were kind of ahead of the curve and got players, or the first three, I should say, got players that absolutely, I expected to come off the board earlier than they did. Josh Connerly at 29, I guess it wasn't that much later than what I expected, but it also was an offensive tackle run that happened fast, and when the shelf fell off, there was just nothing left, you know? And we can get into all of them, but Connerly specifically, and I'm guessing people were like, well, we just brought in Laramie Tunsil, and, you know, we're drafting a left tackle, and he played left tackle at Oregon the last couple of years, but Connerly's 21 years old, man. Like, he's just a pup. And a lot of people in the league think, and I tend to agree, like, this is a player who, with continued, like, strength development, his core strength, and continuing a little bit with the hand usage, he can develop into a really good starting left tackle. But right now, he might be a really good starting guard in the NFL. And you say, well, you know, like, is that what we really want to spend in the first round pick? And my answer is, like, look at where some of the guards went. You know, we had a guard taken at 12 in Tyler Booker. We had another one in Zabel. We had Donovan Jackson all going the first round. And again, like, Laramie Tunsil is a great player. Laramie Tunsil turns 31 years old in August, and he's on his third team. And so this may not be, it is a tremendous signing, and it may be a tremendous signing and acquisition and, you know, an asset for this team, especially with a young star quarterback. There's nothing more important than protecting him. But it may only, maybe it's only for a couple of years, and maybe you're developing Josh Connerly. And also, don't forget, Sam Cosmi is coming off of the surgery. And, you know, it's pointing towards he'll be ready, but until you know, you don't know. And so if the best asset in this organization is Jaden Daniels, you better be prepared to protect him, and you better have backup plans. And so if you draft maybe a starting guard or a guy who can play multiple positions along your line at 21 years old and can develop him, you know, the fastest 10-yard split of any offensive lineman this past year, you watch him, like, ultra quick feet.
Hold on for a second. Can you stop it for a second, Ben? This is great. But I want to hear what he has to say about the other guys, too. Does he get to it, Drab? He's doing like 10 minutes just on Connerly.
He just keeps going and going.
On Connerly? I want to hear him about Amos.
Who do you want? We have Amos.
Amos, and I want to hear kind of his... Listen, I should have said this to you before. I would like to hear a little of his analysis on each of the top couple guys. You know what I'm saying? Like, right. Amos. I want to hear what he has to say about the tech receivers. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, that part comes down to the medical team and what they, like, what does that entail? Is that it's going to be something that is hindering him? Is that something that, like, we're worried about the long term? And obviously, you know, the organization, when it comes to medical and it comes to, you know, the character can be different. When it's the medical, you have the scouting combine, then you have the combine rechecks. Each team has their own doctors, and there's very few things that get past NFL teams from a medical standpoint. What is the difference from organization to organization is what they deem acceptable, right? And so for one team, it could be take them off the board. I'm not saying Amos specifically. I'm saying in general. A certain injury could be take them off the board. Another one could be, well, we value the first and second round picks as – you know, we have to hit on starters, and if this is a concern for the first, you know, so there's different medical standards for each team. What I can tell you is that there was some back information that came out, and I don't know how late you want to call it, but I also know that most evaluators had him late first, early second. You know, and this is a guy who played 34 games at Louisiana Lafayette, transferred to Alabama, kind of just, and I give him a lot of credit, man. It's kind of like, it didn't work out here, moving on, and then came to Ole Miss in 13 starts, and played his best ball.
Mike's dead.
A lot has come out, you know, in the last few days about the drafting process. One thing which has jumped out to me is, you know, Peters went on with Pat McAfee,
mm-hmm.
and he talked about the R&D department that they
mm-hmm.
have.
Mm-hmm.
They have 12 guys who are analytics
mm-hmm.
guys who were recommending a lot of these picks.
Mm-hmm.
And look, McShay seems to like the picks. They felt, you know, they had a commander's caucus too, which apparently when they drafted Lane, everybody on Saturday morning had to submit who they thought would be their favorite pick of the day. And the consensus, the caucus, was that that's who they were going to go for. And then he fell to him and was available and they picked him. So it's a lot of thought in these picks.
I love it. Does he talk more about, do you have anything about Lane? Yeah.
Yeah, I really would have started off the show this way. Instead of Connerly, I should have just, I love Jalen Lane, man. I love him. I know he's 5'9¾", but he's well-built at 191. He's got longer arms. He ran a 4.34. Listen to this. You ready? You probably heard it at this point. You probably heard everything about him. But no wide receiver in the past decade at the Combine has posted a better trio of results in the 40, which he ran a 4.34, the broad jump, 11-foot, and the 3-cone. And so you're talking to top-end speed. The broad jump is the lower body explosiveness. And then the 3-cone is the change of direction, body control, stop, start, all, you know, like, and then you watch him on tape. And here's the thing, like, Jalen Lane he began his career at Middle Tennessee State, and then obviously wound up in Virginia Tech in 2023. He was the best receiver. His numbers just sucked because they didn't have a quarterback throwing the ball. He combined for 79 catches, just over 1,000 yards. But when you look at what he had to do in order to get that production, it was like bubble screens, quick game, reverses, like, the return game, he's outstanding. He was 26 nationally in combined kick return yards, going back to 2021, and ranked second nationally in punt return average with 15.5 back at MTSU. So this guy does a little bit of everything. He's really good with the ball in his hands. Like, that's where he's excellent. I think he might be the most underrated wide receiver from this entire class. Mm. And then I think about him in Cliff's system.
Wow. I love the fact that you're adding just a quick, twitchy, versatile guy to the offense. It's just going to be another chess piece for Cliff Kingsbury.
Yeah.
Just another piece to add along to Deebo Samuel and Terry McLaurin. And
look, like you said, and I saw Jalen Lane play every single game at Virginia Tech for 2 years.
Yeah.
And it's very frustrating to watch them because over the 2 years, like McShay said, mm-hmm. they just struggled to get the ball in the air consistently.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And they struggled to find receivers when they were open. Those guys would just wait a little too long.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's not going to happen here.
Jalen Lane was, when he got the ball, especially in open field, was really good.
I was going to say, did you think he was special and it was just a shame at the time? Or did you not realize how good he was because he wasn't getting it enough?
His first year, which would have been his fourth year in college. But his first year, I thought, okay, he's pretty good. I remember him dropping a couple balls in some big spots, but his final year, his senior year, his mm-hmm. fifth year playing mm-hmm. college, I thought, you know what, man, if they just had a legit quarterback, if he was playing like in Alabama or Georgia or Ole Miss or somewhere in the SEC,
he'd be
putting up some serious numbers.
Wow. He led the team in catches with 38.
Right, exactly.
He's getting married this summer. That jumped out at me.
Okay.
Bold. Yeah, good for him. Young love.
Well, now he's got a super accurate stud quarterback throwing him the ball. So that accuracy and in poor quarterback issue, that's not going to translate to the pros.
If he's on the field as a receiver much, I think he's primarily going to be a returner.
I think he's going to be utilized as a receiver more than you probably think.
This is also a future pick because, you know, Deebo, who knows if he's going to be here long term.
Sure.
You know, McLaurin's obviously, he's not old, but he's 28, 29. So this could be a future pick.
Right.
You know, Jalen Lane could be a guy that they do have in 5, 6, 7 years.
I think he's going to show enough flashes during the OTAs and training camps where Cliff's going to be like, I need to get this guy incorporated. Now, I'm not going to go crazy and bet on wide receiver catch numbers for him as a rookie because I always get in trouble with that. But I think he's going to have a nice little role in the offense.
Everyone keeps saying that Cliff is going to love him as a gadget guy at first.
Yeah.
You know, to blend him in there. I am. He is the one of the four, you know, they have what, five picks? He's the one that jumps out at you as, wow, he really could surprise you and make a play or two.
Yeah.
You know, the other guys, you know, certainly at one and two, you expect those guys to have immediate impact. But he's like the fun one.
Yeah.
You know.
He's the shiny toy you get excited for.
And then I am a little bit interested in the seventh rounder from Arizona, the kid that played one game.
Sure. You like his metrics.
Imagine how good you must be if you played one game and one East Shrine and they still used a draft pick on you.
Right. They obviously liked what they saw when they one game. Fired up your tape.
Now, I know he had other tape, but in the last year, he played one game.
Right.
So he's kind of intriguing, too, Jacory Kroski-Merritt.
Are we a week away from the schedule release?
May 14th.
Yes, correct. Oh, that's gonna be such a great day. What day? Is that a
next third? Wednesday.
Next Wednesday.
So less than a week away.
So next Thursday, a week from today, we'll do our first run through of the dubs and losses.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Grant and Danny's favorite bit.
Sure.
They hate that, but how can you not?
It's a cornerstone of this program.
Most humans, they look at the schedule, they go, all right, winner, loser.
And losses. Yeah, of course.
I mean, Brian Billick did it on the Hard Knocks.
All it is,
I know you so well, I knew you were going to bring that up.
I mean, of course.
All it is human nature to want to pick wins and losses.
Yeah.
That's all.
And your opinion changes. Of course, your opinion changes as your information changes, as the teams make different moves. And then, of course, there's always the X factor of nobody knows. But it is fun to pick. It's fun to guess.
Of course. I'm trying to get you guys to do the schedule pool that we have.
Mm-hmm. I don't care when they play whoever. It means nothing to me.
I know. It's just a bit for the show.
I know, but it's hard to get excited for a bit that I literally have zero passion for.
You don't
for.
Care about most of the betting bits we do.
By the way, thanks to Craig Hoffman for letting us steal his interview with Todd McShay. Some really good nuggets in there.
Right.
It's good booking. Well done.
I'm also intrigued by the way, the receiver they signed. Where was he, Jason? At Ole Miss in his last year? They signed him as a free agent. He's a little longer receiver.
Oh, yeah. You mean Jacory Brooks?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm intrigued by him, too. Now, I know JP says, man, we always talk about the seventh and eighth receivers. Okay. I'm not saying he's going to be a star, but maybe he can make the team and have 20 catches. That's fine. That'd be cool.
Here's what else I need more of in 2025. Need more Luke McCaffrey and need more Ben Sinnott.
But why are you going to get more Luke McCaffrey if you've got more Jalen Lane?
I need more of all of them.
Well, I would think the drafting
of Jalen Lane turns up the heat on McCaffrey.
Good.
It does, but it
just if you believe Lane is going to be a receiver.
Well, I think he's certainly going to compete right off the bat in punt returns and maybe kick returns.
I don't think you just draft a guy at that spot just to be a kick returner.
No. I think that's the initial impact.
Sure.
Yeah.
They'll throw him out of kick returns, but I think they have plans to utilize him in the offense, too. Yeah.
I agree. But I think that Luke will get the first crack at it.
Yeah.
And it'll see if he can produce.
And Jacory Brooks, who you were asking about, he went to Louisville. He transferred from Alabama to Louisville.
Okay, sorry. Yeah. I don't know why I said Ole Miss.
You're thinking of Trey Amos.
When we come back, we'll talk Caps Canes with Tim Donnelly. He hosts Afternoon Drive on the Fan in Raleigh. He's going to join us next to talk about game two between the Canes and the Caps. Bank local, cheer local. In business, every day is game day. Business is always moving up or down, but never still. That's why the Main Street Bank team treats every day like game day. Main Street Bank is a business-focused community bank proudly serving the DMV since 2004. Visit mstreetbank.com to learn how to put our team in your office. Main Street Bank, member FDIC. Equal housing opportunity lender. Welcome back to the show. Junks on 106.7 The Fan, Team 980, 910 The Fan in Richmond, and Monumental Sports Network on the TV side. Time for us to head out to the Rude guest hotline. Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. We'll say good morning to Tim Donnelly, host of The Drive with Tim Donnelly daily, 3 till 6 p.m. on The Fan in Raleigh. Tim, nice. Thanks for the time, man. We appreciate it.
Timmy.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah, so Tim, I'm looking at one of your tweets at Donnelly Sports. This is from May 5th. I'm just going to read it verbatim. Canes have been waiting a full week for game day in Washington. Hope they can flip the switch after a good long rest and play with energy, just like game one versus the Devils after finishing the regular season in a lull. I think mission accomplished. The Canes were clearly the better team here for game one. I mean, they dominated all of the stats. They were the better team on the ice up and down. Hopefully the Caps are able to rebound. What did you think of the Canes' performance in game one, and can they replicate that in game two to try to get the first two games here in Washington?
A pretty good opening statement for them. Replicating that one, I don't know, just because, you know, game ones are so much about, you know, jabbing and trying to figure out your opponent. But yeah, I mean, going back to that tweet, I'm sure you guys experienced this. You never are fully confident that a team's going to be able to flip the switch. Like, only certain teams are able to go from kind of chilling to full speed. At the end of the regular season, they did not come in with a full head of steam, but kind of by choice, resting guys, and then a week off between playoff series. Like, what are you supposed to do with that? So it was really good to see them kind of fly around a little bit. I don't know if any of you guys were in the building, but I can tell you on TV, it looked a little like Tom and Jerry, right? Like these big guys chasing a little more energetic, kind of wily team, and obviously the Canes, they hope they can replicate that kind of action.
Yeah, Tim, I thought the most disturbing thing from the Caps' perspective in that game was that Carolina outhit the Caps 44-31, and the Caps are a bigger, more physical team. You would think the Caps would be able to outhit and out-physical the Canes. Like, if that trend continues throughout the series, it could be a relatively short series for the Caps.
I mean, could be. It's curtains.
Could be.
It's
over. I'm just going to go with could be.
It's over.
I still have a little bit of optimism, unlike EB, one of the show co-hosts.
That first game was very depressing for me. We argued, before, I hate to bum rush his question, but we argued before the series, and we were, I think, some of us on the same page, like, okay, Carolina's good, but maybe shouldn't it at least be like kind of like an even series? Why are they kind of like overwhelming favorites in a lot of people's eyes, Vegas's eyes? Well, I learned. I learned something, actually.
I'll give you this. Like, before I jumped on with y'all, I was debating, like, how over the top do I want to go? Because I watched game one, and sure, it was a 2-1 game, but it could have been 4-1, could have been 5-1.
You dominated. Your boys dominated our guys.
They rang the post a billion times. Even more aggressive on your hit statistic is the Canes had the puck the entire game. They were in the offensive zone for like 33 minutes, and they still out-hit Washington. Mm-hmm. So, you know, just the opportunities when to register hits are less when you have the puck so darn much.
Right.
So I'm sitting here going, like, you know, it's hockey. Anything can happen. Do I really want to give y'all the clip that you're going to be replaying over and over if Washington turns it? But, yeah, I mean, if game one was as, you know, people want to say because it's on the road and it's game one and it was overtime that the Canes stole it. I opened up my show yesterday going, there was no stealing going on. There was a team that earned a win on the road getting credit for it. It's just, you know, because it's hockey and as you guys know, you can play really, really well and lose a game or play really, really well and win by one. They needed overtime to get the win. But they were dominant for darn near that entire game.
I think it became obvious to every Caps fan about halfway through that game, maybe, even though we were up, that if we won that, it would be us stealing it.
Yeah.
That did no not doubt. Deserve to win that game. You know, and I was hoping that we were going to steal it, frankly.
Hey,
and,
Tim, let me ask you.
And there were a few moments.
Yeah.
There were a few moments just that, you know, Gostisbehere fed Leonard a breakaway, and I'm going,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right, that's the one, right? There's the one play that's going to even out all of this mm-hmm. other dominance. But no, they, you know, and Slavin getting the goal at the end is always, that feels good for everybody, right? Four Nations Cup, Mr. America, everybody's about that.
Timmy, when you were talking,
I'm not here.
when you were talking to your listeners, the Canes fans before game one, how were they feeling? Were they pretty confident?
Actually, right now the Canes fans are in a really weird spot because for 7 straight years, the Canes have won a postseason series. So winning in the first round is very much like expected. But then they don't always fly into the second round super confident because they've been there before. And then you add on top of this, you know, national media is down on them. So there's almost like a bitterness that the whole Mikko thing leads to this us against the world deal where, you know, no one wants to play for us or is said too often. So, like, angry might be the term rather than confident. And also, let's not forget how the regular season went between the Caps and the Canes, and the Tom Wilson of it all and all right. the fights and everything. So when everyone is saying, you know, the Caps have the toughness advantage, it's just another reason that Canes fans are going like, well, we're not getting pushed around either, right? There's I would say angry more than confident.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious, where in the pecking order do the Carolina Hurricanes fall in North Carolina sports? In Raleigh, you got NC State, you got college basketball, college football. Where's hockey?
First of all, there's like two Carolinas, right? Because Charlotte is different. We're down here in the Triangle. And, you know, it's hard to put them in a hierarchy. It's actually a good question. Obviously, college basketball is going to be near the top down here. We're in Tobacco Road. Mm-hmm. Kane's probably close after that. I mean, this is a hockey town. That's another thing people get real bitter about, right? Just because we can tailgate outside and actually enjoy our afternoons before going inside and watching a hockey game. You know, it's a hockey town. People care about the Canes a whole bunch.
What's it like covering Brind'Amour? I actually was down in that area, went to a game, and I was like, oh, because it was kind of cheap, whatever. It was like $40, and uh-huh. I could sit right behind the. So I literally sat right behind the Canes bench, and I wanted to shrink into a hole. I was intimidated by the guy just sitting behind him, just by looking at him. Is he like hostile to the media? Does he always have that game face, or does he ever let his guard down? What's the guy like?
He's a hockey guy, right? Rob the bod. I get the intimidation. You want to do like push-ups and like rip out some curls before you like walk in to ask him a question at a press right. conference, just to be like, you know, hey, we're bros.
Right.
He's actually, the more you get to know him, the more of a cool guy he is. The players will absolutely like they'll hide a body for that guy.
Uh-huh.
He gets it right, and he had such a long pro career. That he understands what they're dealing with, like as far as like, you know, well-placed days off and things like that.
Right.
I also think, you know, I don't know if, and I've never talked to him about this. I think at the end of his career, you know, he probably wanted to be a more impactful player as a veteran. So, the veterans on this team are taken well care of. There's a lot of loyalty for the Brent Burns of the world and everything. And I think everybody just appreciates that. Like if you put your time in, you know, you're going to have your opportunity to make an impact on big games.
Joined by Tim Donnelly, host of The Drive with Tim Donnelly, daily 3-6 on The Fan in Raleigh. Were you surprised that the Canes allowed just 14 shots on goal in game one? I mean, that's an incredible number. Had to be an MO for them heading into game one. Do you think they're going to be able to be that effective again tonight?
No, I mean 14 shots. That you, if you go in expecting that in a Stanley Cup playoff game, you're going to be disappointed a whole bunch. I think it was huge, though, as far as if you asked, and when we did this on the show, we play a game called Confidence and Concerns, where we're asking for what you're most confident, what you're most concerned about, and going into the postseason, if you would have asked Canes, Canes fans, what are you most concerned about with the Canes? 97% of the answers would have included the word goalie somewhere. So Freddie Anderson is good, and they just signed him to an extension for next year. But the confidence of the goalies has maybe been a little up and down recently. He's been really good in the postseason, but if you can get him started with kind of a low work, right, you get the one goal allowed game without having to stop 30 shots, that's very good for Freddie Anderson in goal. So, I think it's huge that it happened in the first game. I don't think it can realistically happen a ton beyond, especially like what Ovi had one shot.
Yeah.
Like we're not dumb down here. We know you guys have some offensive players that will get more aggressive after looking at the stat sheet and going like, ooh, you know, that guy can't have Ryan Leonard shouldn't be leading you in shots on goal. No disrespect to Ryan Leonard. He's a puppy. Yeah, they'll be a more aggressive Caps team in a whole bunch of different ways, by the way. Like, there might be a world where Tom Wilson grabbing a mouthpiece looks tame compared to what we see moving forward for the Caps.
Yeah, I was going to ask you. So we had Joe Beninati on the show yesterday. Of course, he does a play-by-play for the Caps. And he said, look, and maybe he's a little slightly biased, okay, but he didn't predict the end of the series. He just predicted it's going to go deep, 6 or 7. Now, if you guys win tonight, I think it's going to be a shorty. But do you believe that this is going to go deep? It's going to go 6 or 7 games.
Well, I'm kind of take locked here. Before the series, I said if it's quick, I actually don't like it. If it was a 4 or 5 game series, I thought it leaned Caps way because that meant their physicality was the difference. And if it went longer, I like the Canes because, you know, I think their skill can prevail. After watching game one, I think it flips, right? If the Canes want this thing to end as quick as possible and not give Washington the opportunity to muddy it up. If the Canes win tonight, I think it gets real fist fight, real street fight like for the games here in Carolina. Because you just know, you know, with the personalities on the Caps, they're not going to go away quietly. So if it's a short series, I think it means the Canes were able to match the physicality, right? Keep winning in hits or keeping it close in hits, and then it gets over pretty quick.
Tim, thanks a lot for the time, man. We appreciate
good stuff,
it.
Bro.
That's Tim Donnelly, host of The Drive with Tim Donnelly daily, 3 till 6 p.m. on The Fan in Raleigh. We'll have you on again soon.
Thank you, man.
Appreciate it, man.
Right, yep.
See you, Timmy.
Our Caps Talk is brought to you by Ace Computers. Ace Computers proudly recommends Windows 11 Pro for the U.S. military. Made in America. Check out acecomputers.com right now. Coming up next, we're going to catch up with Ryan Spader, MLB analytics expert. Earlier in the show, we talked about his close call on a 15-game MLB parlay last night.
He hit his first 14.
He hit 14 out of 15. It would have turned a $40 bonus bet into like $146,000.
He was up 2 runs in the ninth inning.
Yep, he was
on the 15th game.
He was tantalizingly close. We'll talk to him about that next.